Welcome to On Deadline, a deep dive into a single topic from Odyssey's newsrooms. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. Today is the day after Labor Day, and it marks the official return of back to school for many kids across the country. Back to early bedtimes, early alarm clocks, lunches you have to make, homework. Did that all sound like bad news? Let's add fresh kicks and clothes, crisp fall air, and a reliable schedule to even the scales. Still, it's fair to say that many challenges face not only students returning to class after a summer break of fun in the sun, but also districts, political leaders, and teachers. Here's KRLD in Dallas-Fort Worth with a roundup of what they're facing. And many would probably tell you that these concerns are nearly universal.
Karen Molinar says tackling lagging performance is job one. She tells KRLD the district is zeroing in on both literacy and math to close the gap, with some schools even adding extra days to the calendar as the state weighs a possible takeover.
Total revamp of literacy and math curriculum. In our middle schools, we definitely have, and not only in literacy, but math, major concerns with our academics and our scores.
Middle schools will also double the time spent on math this year.
Arlington schools will welcome new students coming up tomorrow. Superintendent Dr. Matt Smith says they'll look to continue to improve scores following some poor marks on campuses. But after struggling with staffing in years past, Smith says they're doing great this year.
We had some consolidations of schools and some new facilities built. We'll continue working through that planning with our community to do what's right for our community for the long term in all of this. And we'll take those next steps over the next couple of years.
Smith says lawmakers took a great step in improving teacher pay, but says each campus is still underfunded.
Whether or not to allow cell phones in the classroom is a top concern for many parents, teachers, and district leaders. Florida, Indiana, Ohio, Texas, and New York have all enacted statewide bans or restrictions on cell phones in classrooms, while states like California and Iowa have mandated that districts develop their own phone-free policies. Here's KRLD on kids and cell phones.
Kids are all talking about the big rule change. A new state law means no cell phones or personal devices in use during school hours. That includes smartwatches, earbuds, and gaming devices. In Carrollton Farmers Branch, Executive Director of Student Services Leon Sulak says they must be turned off and stored out of sight, with only a few exceptions for medical or safety needs.
And so, yes, laptops are on there. That will require, it is a change for our BYOD, bring your own device. Students will no longer be allowed to participate and bring your own device due to HB 1481.
The district says it's about keeping students focused while parents are encouraged to talk with their kids about how they'll adjust to life without their phones during the day. They're going to survive. We all did.
Well, so Mesquite ISD is going to start by trusting students with those devices.
While some districts are collecting devices, Mesquite has another idea. Superintendent Dr. Angel Rivera says they will follow the new law, but they don't want the ban to be punitive to the students. They want to reassure them.
Students will have access to their phones in case of an emergency. That's why we're not putting them in a bag somewhere, retaining them in the morning.
He says students can learn how to follow the rules at school, much like adults do in the workplace. The new cell phone ban goes into effect this year statewide.
Back to school this week throughout the state. It's also the time of year when parents are dropping more than a little coin on back to school shopping. There's, though, something more than just clothes and school supplies. A lot of parents are spending and shelling out for new technology for their students. On today's Ask the Expert, we turn to the expert, the high-tech Texan Michael Garfield, on the KRLD Newsline. So, Michael, what is the hottest piece of technology this year?
This is something that we didn't have to worry about when we went to school. I grew up in, Dallas ISD, and, we had, pens, papers, and zipper bags, but welcome to the 21st century. I could say this tongue-in-cheek, David, but a lot of students certainly going back to college. It's the app you may want. You may want to have something like a ChatGPT or an AI. Obviously, it's controversial when it comes to helping writing papers, but you know what? As an assistant, it can help in some aspects.
Now, when we talk about the tech that they have available and, the apps or whatnot that they can even use on their phone, they're not going to be able to do that with this new cell phone ban. So how important is other types of technology, perhaps tablets and laptops this year?
No, you're right. Exactly. This, the Texas ban right now, it's up to the different districts to actually say yes or no, you can use your phone. It's also the tablets, your smartwatches. But when it comes to, let's talk about college kids. If you're going into a dorm, you have to think dorms are relatively small, so you need all-in-one devices. You know, get a laptop that's large enough to watch TV or video, your YouTube or whatever. That's number one. You want to think about a smart speaker, you know, maybe an Amazon Echo Dot. They're relatively inexpensive for like $50 or so. And I always recommend active noise canceling headphones or earbuds, because odds are you're going to be having a roommate. You just want to shut everything out so you can listen to whatever, so you don't have to, you know, tune into what your roommate is listening to.
You know, school today is a whole lot different than just 20 years ago, where parents actually do have to worry about getting technology as part of their back to school shopping. And that's got to change as far as everything, including saving for back to school.
Yeah, saving for back to school is big. Listen, there's a lot of apps over there that I recommend when it comes to money management. And a lot of these things are free, and some of, you know, you could start socking some money away. But you need to start thinking about college much earlier than we used to, just because of the expenses. And it's not even college, David. You got about high school right now. I do remember that we were at the grade school or high school, and there was a little list. You had to bring some Kleenex and some, maybe some glue or paste or whatever it is. But nowadays, there are some high schools that actually want you to bring laptops, and a specific laptop. Is it going to be a Microsoft operating system? Do you have to have an Apple operating system? So you have to follow the rules. But the fact is, cost is such a major factor that versus, you know, a generation ago.
Yeah, when we talk about the cost, are there good rebate deals or just refurbishing options that won't break the bank?
I like the fact that you suggested the refurbishing. Refurbishing, these are slightly or gently used products. And if you look across the board in terms of technology, you can find a lot of it. There's refurbished computers, there are refurbished laptops, and you could save a lot on this thing. And so you can just do a quick Google search, and there's also apps out there. But in terms of newer gear for back-to-school specials, I think laptops are almost a must, certainly in college, you know, maybe you get down to the high school, maybe even grade school. I saw one. It was an Asus, A-S-U-S. It's one of my favorite laptops I've been using for years. Now, it's not a Microsoft operating system. It's a Chromebook, which is just as fine to do typical word processing and surfing the web. $159, and I think it may have been about Walmart, but this thing is feather light. It's about 1 pound and probably like a, you know, maybe 3/4 inches thick, very light. But look right now, between now and Labor Day, for these back-to-school specials. And
especially, you're talking about Chromebooks. They typically are not the most powerful computers, so they can't necessarily play games on them. That these are really the proper back-to-school laptops for kids, because they don't have a hard drive on them.
It's not only the hard drive, and what I explain to people on my radio show, my TV segments also, difference between Chromebooks and a typical computer that we're used to. You don't have to license the Microsoft name to make it the Microsoft Windows operating system. I mean, but thing is, though, you've got major manufacturers making Dell, you've got Asus, you've got HP, same thing, but when they put Microsoft Windows, that's what you're paying the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars extra for. The Chromebook, which is made by Google, it's kind of an Android operating system, that makes it really inexpensive. But if you're looking for a grade school, maybe some early high school, because kids can drop these things, they can break. I mean, you can get these things, as I said, certainly for under $200, and they're not a powerful to run a video game or something high-end like that. But if you're surfing the web, doing a word processing, you're writing a paper, I think they're perfect.
Gotta love it. Back to school. It's here whether you want it to or not. And it's cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching with everything. Oh, my goodness.
And then there are screen time concerns, especially after news that the amount of time in front of a screen could lead to heart problems. Here's KRLD with more.
With kids and teens back in school, there's fresh concern over how much time they're spending in front of screens. And it's not just all about attention spans or even their grades. There's a new study that was just published in the JAMA Medical Journal that basically suggests that children and young adults who spend excessive hours on electronic devices may face a greater risk for serious health problems down the line. We're joined by Dr. Kenneth Saland. He is a cardiologist with the Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, to break down what this means for families. Thank you so much for joining us here on KRLD.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So what was the kind of the peak interest of this study? What did it really look at? The age ranges when we talk about kids looking at screen time, and how much screen time were they consuming?
Yeah, this was an observational study from Denmark that was recently published. Interestingly, that was the data was gathered in from 2000 and also 2011, which of course now we're so much farther down the road with all the screen time and TV and all these different devices that are going. But anyway, so they looked at children between ages of 2 and 6, and then teenagers defined as around 18, and they looked at their screen time with reference to different metrics or parameters for the metabolic syndrome, which is basically weight or waist circumference, blood sugar, blood pressure, cholesterol, and triglycerides, which are similar to the risk for diabetes. And they were trying to see whether or not screen time, beyond having sort of, we know now with sort of association with mental issues or depression or stress, does it have any physical manifestations beyond sort of the things we already know about? And that's kind of what their questions were.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when we talk, you brought a great point. From 2000 to 2011, technology has boomed, right? And we have seen a complete difference in just the generations of children in school and how they're handling technology. For example, kids in 2000 weren't necessarily handed tablets. They were still using books in school. And yeah. Now we're not only using tablets in school to teach, but then also kids have their smartphones they're taking into class. Right. There's so many issues and conversations around that. But specifically with this study, it also showed how these kids are potentially going to develop some heart issues in the future. What is that correlation? How does that work?
What they did is they found that in kids that like around the age of 6, their average screen time was around 2 hours. And then as they kind of went up in age from age 6 to 10, it was around 3.2 hours. And then as you got to teenagers, they did a lot more of the screen time, like around 6 hours. And so what they were noticing through a lot of metrics and also some they do some AI actually to look at all these variables, but they found that screen time was associated with an increasing cardiometabolic risk, meaning that for every hour basically of screen time, they were getting increased weight or waist circumference, higher risk for increasing their blood sugar, their cholesterol was being disturbed or perturbed, and then and actually even more so when you added the amount of screen time, and then they said what makes it even worse was the lack of sleep. So you compound it with even a higher rate or higher problems with less sleep. And so screen time actually, you're looking and you're not going to bed. So it's disturbing your circadian rhythms, your sleep patterns, and it just makes it even worse. So we're seeing, this is an observational study, but it definitely shows that, we're making physical changes by and it makes sense. You're not exercising, you're not being active, you're on the screen. So, and this is opposed to educational time. This is sort of up even more than just the normal educational screen time in the classrooms.
Absolutely. I mean, when we start hearing, things like high blood pressure and cholesterol, most would assume you're talking about the parents, but when the conversation is focused on children, I mean, what are some things that parents can realistically do, some everyday steps to improve their children's heart and overall health?
Well, they have to be good role models. I mean, I'm a parent, and I try to be a good role model. It's no one's perfect, but you try to encourage exercise. You try to have healthy meals, eat together, learn about what your kids are up to. And frankly, you have to have some restrictions on these types of devices. Age restrictions would be good. I know some of the schools are limiting cell phone use in the school itself. Just being a better parental role model is important. I can't tell them not to use their screens when I'm on the screen myself or that kind of thing. So that's important. And always just, exercise, being active, being engaged, and frankly, they always say a little bit of boredom is makes people creative. You're not being constantly entertained, so you need to figure out what's good and what you're going to have to do and be creative and innovative, and that's helpful. So
yeah, absolutely. Are there any other recommendations when it comes to the amount of screen time kids and teens should stay within a healthier range?
Yeah, I mean, if you're under the age of two, you really shouldn't have any screen time. And then between two and six, they say basically an hour, but sort of supervised. And these are recommendations that I was reading about. And then over that age for everybody, over the age of six or so, you know, it's like 2 hours max. For these are entertainment screen times, not just, I mean, like there's going to school and having education and, you know, having the computer, that's different. But having sort of recreational screen time, one should limit it to, if possible, 2 hours a day. So.
Absolutely. Last question for me is just for families who feel like maybe it's too late because their kids are already spending so much time on their screens. Maybe there's a little bit of underlying addiction there. What yeah. advice would you have for just making gradual, sustainable changes?
It's hard. I mean, you look at all the different, you know, these multi-billion-dollar companies are putting all the resources into making these things more addictive. You know, they were brought up to Congress. They were, you know, interviewed, and you know, they're you know, they are using the right language in terms of like we're trying to change. The companies are saying we're trying to change and use more restrictions. But you know, it's going to be like anything. This is an addictive thing, and you know, maybe warning labels, maybe you know, just something. We need more awareness of what these things can actually are doing. And like I said, this observational study was from as late as like 2000 and 2010, 2011. We're, you know, 15 years later now. I mean, things have really advanced, especially with AI and algorithms trying to really get us involved with these screens. So I don't know. I mean, that it's a work in progress. Yeah.
That is Dr. Ken Salent here on KRLD.
There is one way that technology could not only improve the way kids learn, but save their lives. Technological advances that would allow schools to quickly spot and disarm a shooter are at the forefront of everyone's mind after a shooting at a Catholic school in Minneapolis last week. Here's WWJ News Radio in Detroit with more on an AI-powered hardware system that can automatically detect gunshot sounds in indoor environments like schools, offices, and places of worship.
Every second matters in this type of situation, according to the first responders. So a manual call to the first responders with clear location information should be made as soon as possible, which is difficult due to the stressful situation. So the solution that I developed is a hardware device that automatically detects gunshot sound in an indoor environment. The proposed device can be attached to the walls or ceilings of schools, offices, clubs, places of worship, etc., similar to the smoke detectors or nightlights. And they can notify the first responders as soon as a gunshot is fired. So the proposed system will remove the burden of manually calling the first responders during gunshot event. Police will arrive sooner, and thus it will help to stop the shooter early. The injured people can be taken to the hospital quickly, and thus more lives can be saved. So this is the overall idea.
So I guess getting more specific about it, what's the kind of range on this device? Like, is it one per school, one per classroom? How does that work?
Okay, regarding range, we tested it in Dearborn Police Station, gunshot range. The gunshot range was not too big. So maximum we were about 4 feet away from the shooter. And it was successfully detected all the gunshot sounds. So according to our latest tests, it can detect gunshot sound from a 40-foot radius. If you think of a circle, around the 40-foot radius of the device, it can detect the gunshot sound. So say, for example, in a school, the device can be placed every after 80 feet distance, for example, to cover the enter school.
Gotcha. So it's more, you know, every, like you said, 40 feet or so. So I got you there. How does it filter out other loud noises? I know it says that it's able to do that with thunder, balloon, whatever. How is it able to differentiate those?
Okay, thank you. So this technology is based on artificial intelligence. So what I did, I trained a deep learning model that can classify gunshot sound and background sounds. So to train the deep learning model, we developed a data set of gunshot sounds from blank guns. So we had a blank gun, and by collaborating with Eastern Michigan University and EMU's police department, we shot blank guns in our campus, and we recorded those sounds. So thus we had a data set of blank guns from a pistol and from an automatic rifle type of gun. So this is one class of sound. Another class of sound are the other sounds, like different background sounds that can happen in a school or in a home environment, such as people talking, ball bouncing, door slapped, people clapping, laughing, all these type of sounds like thunderstorms, rain. We got some of those sounds from online sources, and also I gathered some of my students and told them to make sounds, make noises with your phones, talk, gossip, everything. So I recorded those sounds. So once I have these two classes of sounds, then I trained a deep learning model that can classify a new sound as a gunshot sound or as a background sound. So whenever it detects the new sound as a gunshot sound, then it sends the notification using the internet to the smartphone of the police and other security personnel.
So, in moving on to the police, you said that Dearborn Police had done some tests with it. What has feedback been like from law enforcement, and how many schools, or I guess, what has feedback been like from schools as well that are interested?
I think more than 60 customer discovery interviews where we talked with school principals, police officers, and different other people who can be in our in part of this this system. So we validated our hypothesis that are they are interested. So is this solution is something they are willing to buy, pay for it, and is this something important they feel? So our so we completed this customer discovery, and our hypothesis is validated. So most of the schools say that this is very important, so they need that. But one of the major problem is the funding. So there are several other solutions also in the market, but they are very expensive. So they are looking for something that is cost effective. So if you look at different schools in Michigan, you will not find too many schools which has this automatic type of gun detection system, due to the high cost of the other solutions available. So the only thing that is keeping them away from adopting these technologies is the cost, and sometimes awareness that these technologies exist. These are the main two reasons, awareness and cost. So that's what we found. So our plan is to develop this gunshot detector device, which is very easy to install. It's like a small device, like a charger of your smartphone. You can just plug it in on the wall outlets directly, no special installations required. And you share your device to the local, to your nearest police station using your smartphone app, and you are done. So it's very plug and play type of thing. Yeah, so regarding the feedback, like up to now, we are so our plan is in next fall, in next September, October at that time, we are going to do pilot projects with several schools. Up to now, 10 schools have confirmed they'll be doing the pilot project. So after the pilot project, we'll learn, we'll get feedback from them, and we're going to go from there.
But with technology comes challenges, some of which play into a classic parental urge for their kids to win, be the best, be top-notch at everything. Roughly one-third to nearly three-quarters of U.S. teens have used AI for their schoolwork. And when it comes to using parental help instead of computer-assisted help, one survey found that about 40% of parents admitted to having done their child's homework. But struggling, you know, it's part of life, isn't it? WWL's Tommy Tucker talked to Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, and host of the Supercharged Life podcast about how far is too far when it comes to parents trying to supercharge their kids' educational wins.
School's back. Kids got a lot of homework. I was watching something on television the other day where they were talking about the height-weight ratio of kids in backpacks as if parents didn't have enough to worry about. But basically, a kid that weighs 100 pounds shouldn't be carrying around a 50-pound backpack is what they're saying. Makes sense?
Wow. Yeah, it does, actually. I mean, growing bones, right? Makes sense.
But they have already said, too, I've heard from educators that a lot of times students carry more than they need because it's almost like a security blanket, which brings us to you as a clinical and forensic neuropsychologist. How do you go about managing, because as a parent, that's what you are as a manager, how do you go about managing the whole homework, life, school balance? And let's start with Luca, who's four.
Yeah.
As an example, not him specifically.
Right. Well, I mean, I feel like everybody who, you know, talks about balance, I mean, it makes sense. You're using that word to try to remind yourself that, you know, it can't just be one thing in your life. You can't be overly focused on one thing and then, you know, at the exclusion of others. But I also think that sometimes the word balance creates this illusion that that's even possible. I mean, I talk to so many people who are just like, balance is not really possible. What does that really even mean? So I get it. You know, it's just, there's just always these competing demands. And of course, you and I have talked about this. Your brain doesn't actually multitask. It has to switch back and forth really quickly. That's what multitasking actually is, which actually exhausts you and depletes you cognitively and physically over time. So I think that it, maybe it's more about prioritizing certain things over others on certain days, and then maybe the next day it's a different set of priorities that might come first that day, as opposed to thinking that maybe you're going to get that balance every single day. That might be more of an impossible task if you're really talking about the logistics.
Yeah, I think you just said a mouthful there, because you're not going to get, you got to talk about being realistic, and you're not going to achieve balance every day. That's not going to happen. It's impossible. The workload shift, this shifts, that changes. So you strive to gain what? Get a balance where you can, or offset Monday with Tuesday? How would you go about that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, when I'm thinking about like my own priorities every single day, that they do switch in terms of the things that are at the top of my to-do list. I do make sure, especially as you were saying, you know, our kids grow up so fast that I make sure that every day Luca has some type of social and educational enrichment. And sometimes I have to enlist family members, other people to help to take Luca to those things because I'm not able to transport him because of my work. But I also try to make sure that every day I have some quality time with Luca. But, you know, some days, unfortunately, I just will have less because I'm so busy at work. And other days when I'm a little less busy, I really take advantage of it. And I end up having a ton of quality time with Luca. And that's kind of what I mean. It's like every single day, the balance is going to be whatever you want to term it, whether the word is balance or something else. It's going to look different, you know? So I think that maybe that's the way to go about it, is just really thinking, well, what do I have to do today? But also just knowing that certain things are really important to you. You'll still get to do a little bit of those things, but maybe just not as much as you want every single day, you know, and accepting that to a degree, because it, every day can't look the same.
I don't know if you've seen this on streaming or not, but on the History Channel, they have a show, Hazardous History, and Henry Winkler hosts it. And it, what I found interesting about it is the different standards. Back in the 50s, they had a game that you could buy for your kids, a science kit, that actually included uranium and active uranium. So it would give kids exposure to, I guess, radiation. They had other things like they could do that and rides and so forth, where today you try to do it, it could never, ever happen. And the reason I bring that up is when it comes to homework, I don't know how you draw the line, because Dr. Judy, you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, I'm sorry. The number dropped out on my screen. I thought you had disappeared.
Oh, weird.
So how do you draw the balance between, or not balance, but how do you decide? You got to teach them to fly is the point I'm making here, but you don't want them to crash either, right? So how do you decide how much to help them, how much not to help them, not to help them, rather? Yeah. Do you set the rule ahead of time? Do you adjust later?
I think you have to be willing to adjust later, but it's always good to kind of think through it ahead of time. I think that a lot of it comes from our own childhood and whether or not, you know, we felt like we were overly helped or didn't get enough help. And oftentimes when people, you know, parent their own children, they're either going to repeat a pattern for better or for worse, or they're going to say, oh, I didn't like how that happened with me and I wanted to be completely different. But as we've also talked about, Tommy, so many times, it's so important for our kids to learn while they are still under our roof how to problem solve, you know, how to handle disappointment, that it's not that you're just standing by when they're crying, not helping them, but it's also like, well, I think that they've got this. And if I just let them struggle a little bit, they're going to eventually get there. Mm-hmm. And I've had to do those things kind of in the moment with Luca. I don't know if I had a plan going in, but sometimes I'll see him struggle when he gets into a new environment and he's like, just wants to be with me. And I'm like, no, you know, you have to go. Like, I'll like push him to go and be by himself. And he's so distressed. But then like 15 minutes later, he's overcome it. But that first 15 minutes is so stressful. Like, there is a part of me that's just like, okay, I'll just hold you and we'll just do this whole class together. It's like, no, but you should do this class with your peers. You don't need my help. Mm-hmm. You know, but when they look so distressed, of course, you want to just go and run and comfort them. But that may not be the best for their resilience. And then what I try to do is, again, I don't have all the answers, but I'm trying to figure it out. And I try to, at the end of the day, you know, right after the event, will say, hey, I'm really proud of how you came back. I saw how upset you were in the first 15 minutes, but then you ended up having a great time. I'm super proud of you. I just try to reinforce when he overcomes things. As little as they seem, I know that that's going to make a difference as he grows up.
I don't know if Luca takes any martial arts, does he?
Mm-hmm.
So I think they called it, I'm trying to remember, I think they called it a kata. Is that the right word or not? But my kid was like, I don't know, maybe four or five, and it's this series of exercises that they have to go through with the martial arts. And this is a while ago, I'm trying to remember. But I remember the kid forgot it, like, early on. And if you, it's like reciting a poem. Once you forget step one, the rest of it is just gone. And you just wanted to run on stage and swoop her off and run away and hide. And the only thing you can say after it's over is, you know, that's okay. You'll have another chance. Stuff like that happens. It happened to me, et cetera. That is part of learning to be a human, right? You got to fail occasionally.
Absolutely. I mean, none of us like failing, but at the same time, whenever I fail or make a mistake, I really learned a lot from it, Tommy. I just made a huge mistake a couple of weeks ago. And guess what? Like, now my organizational system is much, much better. Let me tell you that. It was a big clerical error.
Wait, now your what is
but
better?
It was big. It was a big clerical error.
Oh, okay.
But now my organizational system is so much better because I don't ever want to make that particular mistake again. But, you know, I mean, it's just, you learn the most when you fail, honestly. Mm-hmm. And then you really reevaluate. You feel really bad in the beginning, but then, I mean, I feel like I've always learned a good lesson when I failed. And my biggest memories are when I fail, you know what I mean? But not in a bad way, not in a self-deprecating way, perhaps. Of course, I'm self-deprecating in the beginning when it first happens. But I'm talking about, like, they're most memorable for me because I then improve. And then I'm proud of myself for making that improvement.
Well, I'll say this. If you're ever served with divorce papers, you realize marriage is not about love, rainbows, and unicorns. You're creating a business partnership is what you're creating. And a lot of people don't realize that. No, you are, really. A lot of people don't realize that going in. But when you get divorce papers, you realize that, well, we're breaking up this partnership, this legal partnership, and it's blank v. blank, and it's a civil action. But so when it comes to kids and homework and grades, everybody wants their kids to get good grades, and we're going to have to spend some time talking to teachers about this at one point, but everybody wants a kid to get good grades. I know teachers, and I know if the teachers can tell when the parent does the work or when the kid does the work, but the teacher can't prove it, so the kid gets the good grade anyway. As a parent, how do you balance wanting the kids to get A's and you want the free ride to Stanford, right, or wherever, Princeton? Ian Ozan, our news guy, went to Princeton. You want the free ride there, but are they really learning anything if you're doing all the work for them? Tell parents how to balance that, Dr. Judy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that right now people are so competitive with their kids. They do start to do their homework for their kids. They want their kids to be the best. But it's not their kids who's being the best. They're being the best. And it's like, yeah, of course you're going to be the best when you compare yourself to a third grader. So I think that's tough, right? You know how important it is for kids to get good grades, and especially as they get older, especially as they're approaching high school or even just, you know, junior high, and you're trying to get into the best high school. Maybe there's some prerequisites. You want to give them that edge. We may not have talked about this, but there are also parents who try to give their children an edge by, for example, getting them a stimulant medication when they really don't actually have ADHD. And that's not actually the best way. Not only is it not safe, but if you don't truly have ADHD, the stimulant meds are not going to have the intended effect. That you
is it any different than drugging a racehorse, really? I don't think it is.
Right, exactly. Yeah, or right, or like, you know, with something
steroids,
bodybuilder,
baseball just, play, exactly.
They're
right.
taking tons of steroids to get the edge. But at the end of the day, that's not actually going to help them. It's not going to serve them because you're not making them independent. They're not going to be able to solve their own problems. And I will just say that from my own clinical experience, seeing patients who come to my office, many of them have what we call this failure to launch syndrome. You probably heard about it. It's like 30, 40, and even 50-year-olds.
Heard about it. I've seen the movie.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of like that, except, you know, maybe it's not as cute as they get older,
no,
right?
It's
they
not.
Try to
exactly.
give us these, yeah, like, you know, they give us these A-list Hollywood actors, but it's like they don't all look like Matthew McConaughey. But nevertheless, a lot of the times it's because their hands were held a little too tight during their childhood. And then, of course, now the parents are lamenting that. Why is our kid having failure to launch? And it comes from a good place, potentially, but then kids just don't have the practice of what it even feels like to do things on their own. So I think parents need to try to balance, okay, well, this is me assisting versus me actually doing the project. They also need to balance, you know, teaching the kid the skill and having them do it themselves and having patience. I think that sometimes parents get a little bit impatient. They obviously have things to do. So they'll just say, okay, well, this is the answer. Like, it took you too long, but if you're not really ready to actually just sit and like help them to learn the processing, which is what you're teaching them, then maybe you need to hand that off to another adult that day, you know, because I think that that's what happens a lot is also parents get busy and they're like, oh, let me just fill this out for you so we're going to be done, you know.
Let's talk more often about this next time, Dr. Judy. It seems like we can wrap it up by saying, let's start with, in a big circle here, what's best for the kid overall? And then work back from that, right?
Yeah, I like that.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the On Deadline podcast. It was written and produced by Christy Strouser and by me. You can subscribe to On Deadline on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.